Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is 4 Network.
Credo is the daft of the Football Daft podcast.
Is that a good story? Is that a good story?
I've got an encyclopedia brain.
He's got a damn man nothing.
Fuck's sake. What are you, a fucking hooligan?
This is Football Daft.
You're a Rangers man. I'm a Hearts man.
With Ewan Cameron.
I work for Showtime and ESPN.
And
hey, that's happened to Stevenson.
Oh my days. Welcome everybody to the Football Daft podcast. And isn't it great that it's Christmas time and everyone can be happy and no one's got any complaints about anything, Grado?
Disagree. Bad week.
Are you over it yet?
No, of course I'm not.
I'm sorry, mate. I'm sorry.
You know what?
How did you find out?
Well, so the pantomime started at 2 o'clock and I managed to catch when the game started, like the first 5-10 minutes. I thought, oh, here we go, by the way. We're playing not too bad. I managed to see Ryan Jack's shot saved by Foster. Uh-huh. I thought, right, come on. And then I think it was middle of the second half. Michel Soutbob just gave me the eyes as if to say, and I went, no. And then the door.
Were you on stage at the time?
I was on a stage.
And Michel Soutbob came on from the wings. And we, SpongeBob, gave you the old...
SpongeBob, aye. And so, that's what happened, and I've not watched any of it back. I've heard we played really well. But at the end of the day, Celtic lifted the cup. And I think that's actually more... It hurts more that we apparently dominated the game than That hurts more than getting pumped for a 5-0.
Do you know the amazing stat for me? Was Rangers had 9 shots on target. Mm-hmm. And do you know how many Celtic had?
How many?
1.
Aye. Shite. It's just in this, in hindsight as well, with Tav no taking the penalty and stuff like that. But I mean, I can't even ask Tom about Fit by the Day. I honestly can't.
What do you want to talk about then?
Well, yesterday went to the Glasgow markets and I'm walking through Central Station and I went, I was with my girlfriend, I went, that's Gary McAllister, that's Gary McAllister. I was like, hey, hold on, he's on the phone. I want a picture with him, Gary McAllister.
Oh.
Yep.
What a
Leeds
player.
Liverpool legend. And so she's going, don't ask for a picture. Come on, you came in. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm having a picture with him. So he hangs up the phone. And as I go to get a picture with him, I notice he's standing with Chuck Young, who I know we've done Scott with. So I bypass Gary. I'm going, Chuck, how you doing? He's like, how you doing, Grado, my man? I'm like, Gary, do you know Grado? And he's like, no. And I'm like, we have met. He's like, have we? I'm like, aye, we met at the PFA Awards. You were eating your dinner and I kind of buzzed in and asked for a selfie. It was a bit rude, but it was half cut at the time. And he went, all right. And Chick goes, aye, he's on Scott Squad in the pavilion. He does the panel. And he went, oh, I know you knew. So it was such a random Monday lunchtime picture. Me, Chick Dung, and Gary Mack. Delighted.
Oh.
That kind of turned the...
2 midfield maestros and Scotland's top wrestler.
Correct. So that kind of took the... What would you say?
The edge.
Aye, took the edge off a wee bit.
It was a wee boost for you.
I went to town at the markets. You know, I had freshly made pancakes with hummus and Nutella. had a couple of beers. I had Buckfast mulled wine. It was a good wee day, man.
What?
Aye, Buckfast mulled wine. They've got a wee stall selling that. So
it's giving me the bulk, just thinking about that.
Well, I'm not a bucky drinker at all. It smelled putrid, but actually went doing quite nice. Mm-hmm. So I had that.
Did you start a fight after that or urinate in the street?
I never urinated in the street.
Keeping in the Christmas theme,
yeah.
A star rises in the east. End.
Oh my days, the minutes going so slow. And then when they blew the last whistle, oh my days, I was buzzing.
So it was the hardest game of your life and perhaps one of the most valuable emotional lessons.
Oh my days, best game ever.
Oh my days. Jeremy Frimpong there, who was magnificent but got sent off. That was his interview on BBC.
See,
Sport
I couldn't even Emma. Tell you who got sent off. There you go. Was it him that got sent off?
Yeah.
They don't usually go for the people. You don't usually interview the guy that gets sent off.
Anyway, Frimpong. Happy 19th birthday to Frimpong. He was absolutely superb. Really daft tackle for the penalty, I have to say. Although I heard him say that he didn't think he should be sent off. Really? Hello? It was pulling back the trigger. Not. Although having said that, Celtic, I hear, are appealing the red card
right.
on the grounds that it wasn't a goal-scoring opportunity as the ball was at the feet of Morelos. Anyway, Jonathan Gould is our star guest today. Celtic's goalkeeper, the year they stopped 10 in a row. And of course, they won the League Cup back in 97-98. I can't believe it's 22 years already. I mean, Gould, a great lad. Not spoken to him in years. So he'll be coming on later. And on Who Are You? I'm really looking forward to this because it's one of my favourite people. One of my favourite turns.
You say this, but everybody that comes on.
Yeah.
You do?
I like a lot.
You've never went, and this Who Are You guess is a bit of a dick, but
well,
you don't.
But I wouldn't get them on if they're a bit
of
a dick.
That's true.
There is a vetting process goes on here. If I book them, they've got to be decent blokes.
Okay.
Anyway, this fella here,
I'm looking forward to it.
Who may be male.
Stop telling me if they're male or female. I want to try and guess.
They may be male.
That.
They may be female.
Right. No bother.
Are worth waiting for.
Right. Okay. Looking forward to it.
Very, very funny. And I just got a text message and my phone wasn't on
me. So did that. And it's somebody asking if I want to do something on Thursday night. And come on. Here's my rant.
Grado's rant.
Okay, then I've just had another text. And I'm not going to say who it is. But I've just been asked to do something again on Thursday night. And it's like, look.
That's nice.
I'm going to be nowhere else. Absolutely nowhere else apart from Christmas Day and New Year's Day, which I was spending with my family. I'm at Pano. I'm eating, sleeping, breathing, shitting, whatever, the lot, the full bong, panel until the 12th of January. Is it 12th? I'm still going to be singing about Christmas, the full lot, when people are back at their works. I'm going to be the panel, so I can't do anything. I can't meet up with you. I can't go for dinner. I can't go to the pictures with you. I can't come and walk your dog. I can't come and date. F all. I'm at panel, all right? So I can't do nothing.
Aye, but can you buy me lunch?
No!
Can you come and wash my car?
No.
Can you come and take the dog for a walk?
No. Speaking of dogs, my dad's dog, Jeannie Hudwains, 8 puppies came out of her farter. Not her farter, but it was such a sight to see. I've never seen it before, man. I was biffing me out. The dog's just walking. Because my somebody that I know is interested in buying a golden retriever off my dad. My dad's got it all set up. It's all brilliant. He's got the wee den set up. It's all heated and there's cushions and it's all done the right way. My dad's getting right in it, so he is.
Oh.
And somebody was inquiring about it, going, what's the deal with the puppies? When they're going to be born? And I text my dad saying, what's the update? And when he phoned me, and I thought he was in his, he's a taxi driver, I thought he had steaming women in the back of his taxi. I said, and he's like, get running now! You see, it's happening, it's happening. Get running now. Hurry up, there's 4 in the flare. So I jumps in the motor and I drives round and oh my God, I couldn't believe it. Just seeing, they're just plopping out and the wee like, bubbles and Pear Genie was licking them and I'm going, is it deed? And then she licks them and then they come alive and it's beautiful and it was amazing to see. So Golden Retriever's on sale if you want to contact.
That's brilliant.
Just in time for Christmas.
You're buzzing about that, old son.
Oh, it was beautiful to see, man. It was she was brilliant. And I shout out to my mate Pete Dong, Peter Miller.
Why is Stevenson, he called Pete Dong?
Because he has the largest penis in Europe.
I had a feeling that's what it was.
Yep,
but I still didn't
and
ask
he
it.
Done well with a midwifery. He was there. Had his gloves on and he was brilliant at keeping them all nice and warm and putting the wee puppies into Jeannie's teats. You know, it was an eventful night. But it was scary seeing them coming out and they don't move until Jeannie licks them. But it was amazing.
So in summing up.
Don't ask me to do fucking anything during panel season. And then after panel, I'm getting into Scott squad. So even there, you probably want to get a hold of me either. Speak to me in February. Oh, and then I've got a wrestling tour, actually. So just leave me alone.
Right, listen, as it's Christmas time, we want to pay our respects to the nativity story by looking at the picture of the little baby Jesus in the stable.
Hey, Mary.
Joseph.
Three musketeers. Right, keep going.
Oh, brilliant. The three musketeers and the star rising in the east. Oh, my days. And of course, the donkeys. And we thought it would be nice for everyone to talk to us about the donkey
of their team.
Of their team. It might be now, it might be in the past. For example, the biggest donkey I can think of in an Old Firm context, Raphael Shite. Cost millions of pounds. He was called Shite and he played like that.
It was also, it was just so funny watching it in STV News going, Celtic have signed, where was he, for Brazil?
Yeah, it was a Brazil.
Raphael Shite. And I was like, he is actually called Shite? He's called Shite? Like, who's playing up front, Shite? Was it a striker?
It was a centre back. So that's the kind of idea we're looking for. We're looking for your favourite donkey. Mm-hmm. I want you to give us one.
Oh, I've got mine ready to go.
So let us know on social media then. There's the Football Daft Facebook page. On Twitter, it's at Football Daft Pod. On Instagram, it's Football Daft Podcast. And on YouTube, it's Football Daft. So have you had time to think about one then?
Oh, it's been
for the teddy bears.
My donkey for Rangers has got to be none other than Umar Sadiq.
Who?
Umar Sadiq. I knew right. I think he played in a pre-season friendly.
When was that?
And he was at Bambi on Ice last year. Sure, we played Aberdeen in the semi-finals of the League Cup. And he was the only player we could play.
Last season?
Aye. And sure, he dived in the penalty box. An absolute fucking rotten player. And you know what?
Was it worse than Philip Sable?
Aye, it was. He definitely was.
Really?
And you know what really got to me was he was always parading his cell phone, Instagram, with his big Mercedes, his Gucci tracksuits, his tidy bird. He was howling. And then he had the cheek to bite at Rangers fans once he left. Don't get me wrong, he did get it tight on the internet. But honestly, who signed him? I'm putting it on right now. I'm a better footballer than Umar Sadiq. I'm a better footballer than Umar Sadiq.
You're the guy that missed a chance at Ibrox Park from about 3 inches out.
And what?
Brilliant. So listen, next week is our last Football Daft podcast before Christmas. So we want to know your festive donkeys, your Christmas donkeys from your club, or maybe from your rival's club. Let us know anyway on social media. Get in touch with us. And for this segment of the show, we have removed Grado from the room and brought in the Who Are You mystery guest. And later, Grado will come in and try and guess who it is, wearing a very, very, very natty blindfold. And I can reveal to you, dear listener, that the mystery guest this week on Who Are You is none other than comedian and actor, I shouldn't forget, Mr. Raymond Mearns. Raymond, good to see you.
Good to be here, David. Lovely to be here.
I have to say, one of the scariest things I've ever had was one, when you picked on me at one of your hilarious stand-up acts in Edinburgh. And secondly, when I was hosting the Motherwell Player of the Year dinner, I noticed you were at the back of the room and I found that very, very nerve-wracking.
Well, first of all, I can assure you, when I give you a severe ass-ripping at my gig, there is no malicious intent, and there's certainly no contact, so...
And nothing physical.
I'm not so sure if giving somebody a good shuriken's a crime.
Shuriken's a great word, isn't
it's
it?
It's a great word. It's an old Glasgow word, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what he needs? He needs a right good shuriken.
I think the Oxford English Dictionary would probably say pelters instead, for pelters, younger viewers.
Right, I don't know. Shuriken's good. So, I don't know, I don't recall you being at the front row of my gig or being at the gig.
I wasn't at the front row, I was quite a bit back actually, in the cheap seats, but you still spotted me.
Wow, I don't remember that, but what was the second one? Me being in the room, I was a civilian that night, David.
You were.
So, I'm curious enough, because I spend so much of my professional life stunning up, making an absolute rank fool of myself. I really honestly love to just, you know, if I'm out, to be anonymous and just be you know, under the radar, incognito, which for me is easy, actually. I mean, my claim to fame was my Uncle James phoned me up one day from Southampton. He went, Raymond, you're famous. You're famous. He says, how? You're 14 across in a Daily Record crossword. It says, Raymond, 6, comedian, 14 across. And he went, no. And he says, it's you. I went, that's
that's magnificent. Whenever I switch on TV just now, if there's a comedy show on from Scotland, if Grado is not in it, you're in it.
Maybe not for a few years. I do the Breaking the News show,
yeah,
which
I love that.
A lot of people watch, which is phenomenal. And I went on tour this year. And because I get people kind of coming who's seen the Lemmy show, which was really big and then went on to Netflix, you get a lot of the younger sort of generation coming. Then you get an older age profile watch the Breaking the News. So it's amazing to just have some purchase over the different kind of demographics.
Oh, demographics. I like it when you get technical.
Aye, you see, despite the fact I talk like a bricklayer, I'm smarter than the average bear, I think.
Aye. Were you good at football at school?
Do you know what? I was terrible at football, but what I was amazing at was I could place a ball with incredible speed and accuracy. So I was really good as a centre forward, but I was a penalty box poacher. Now, thankfully, I never really played offside at school, or I would have been the one that scored half the goals I scored. But I also, there was a guy in my school called Paul Harvey who became a professional football player. Uh-huh. I remember beating the teachers once on a trip to the Magnum Centre. I remember putting about 10 past the modern studies teacher, and it really annoyed him. And Paul Harvey laid everyone in the moon.
Well, that's brilliant. Now, Paul Harvey had a good career, did he not?
I know he played professionally, I know for a fact, did he go to... I know he played for...
Here we are, like, born 1968.
Uh-huh.
Started his professional career in England in 1986-87 with Manchester United.
I know, I went to Man U.
Decent.
Awesome.
Half decent. Aye. Then he'd spells elsewhere, Airdrie, Raith Rovers, Dumbarton, Livingston, Queen of the South, Motherwell, Stenismuir, Airdrie United and Queen's Park. And he's now an under-21 side coach, South Camlachie.
Phenomenal footballer.
Good stats.
Really tremendous attacking midfield player. Mm-hmm.
So was there anyone else in your school who would have gone on to make the grade? Because that part of Glasgow mass-produced footballers.
Well, there was Pat Nevin was in fifth year when I started.
Okay.
At St Andrews. So I remember Pat, and because he'd signed at the time an S form for Celtic, and that was big. He was big man on campus, wasn't he? He was the man. So I remember Pat. Oh, it was heavy metal badges on his jacket and all that.
Now, Raymond, I saw you at the Motherwell Player of the Year dinner from the stage. I could see you out there. So how big a Motherwell fan are you then?
Well, my good lady, the lovely Annie, is a mad Motherwell fan. And I mean mad to the point of when she's in the ground, irrational.
Oh, really? Right.
Oh, I mean, a real football fan.
An irrational female.
Oh, irrational. I mean, you kind of get a pie, the referee's getting hot with it, right? So she's mad for Motherwell. So we started kind of watching. I remember when Motherwell, two seasons ago, you know, they got to the League Cup final and the Scottish Cup final in the same season, mm-hmm. which was an awesome thing. We started, Anne and I, we went along and started watching some of the games. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of go into it.
So Motherwell's your team then. What, so you're a relatively recent convert
to the well.
You've
jumped
the dyke.
Oh, so, I have.
So coming from Easterhouse when you were a laddie, who were you supporting then?
Oh, in the days I'd follow Celtic and we watched Celtic. I mean, I started watching Celtic back in 74, and we'd get the bus for Easterhouse to Hale and Vale Street. Used to go to Hale and Vale Street, then to the Grun. And my parents always insisted that we went to, at the time, it was, you know, to the right-hand side of the main stand, which was where the, you know, the Polis gate and the first aid gate was, which is like, you know, the Rangers end.
Yeah.
And Sissy would sit there and wouldn't allow us to get into the jungle or anything like that. Because we were only 7 years old.
Wow, so you went your own. Who's been the most famous person you've met in a football context?
Oh, it would have to be Billy McNeil. I did this thing years ago for... I knew these two entrepreneurs who ran this online poker thing in conjunction with Poker Stars in America or something. And they gave me the job to kind of write the script and make the wee film, which was going to be FC Poker Room, which was for the Scottish Football League. Mm-hmm. And we did one for Celtic, which was very specifically just Celtic's poker portal. And we met with the Celtic directors, and Billy was... had agreed to come and make the wee film, which along with myself, and I'd wrote the script and we'd got it filmed and all that. And so we went one day to Celtic Park before we shot the wee film, and I got to hang about with Billy McNeil for like an afternoon at Celtic Park, and it was amazing. He is...
You're smiling when you recall this.
I know. It's one of the... you know, I don't deserve to have had that experience when so many people have invested much, much more in Celtic than I have ever done. But it was just wonderful. I remember we were out in the car park. I have no idea why we were out in the car park, but we were just walking about and Billy's talking away, and Big Bobo was getting into the boot, his motor. And it's just, Billy McNeil was probably the most famous centre half Celtic's ever had, maybe. And he went, look at Big Bobo. He's magnificent, isn't he? And the twos are just standing there watching Bobo Baldigan through the boot of his motor. And it was beautiful. It was a really special time. And then the day we shot, and we went for lunch in Stravagan. I remember we shot the thing and went for lunch and sitting, and he's so full of stories and places he's been and things he's done. One of my favourite stories is his best pals with Pat Crerand. And he said about Pat Crerand, he said, Pat Crerand's never changed since he was a wee boy. He's just always the same. And he says, I remember me and Pat went on holiday to Spain back in the 70s with our wives. And Pat Crennan's missus has started wearing his European Cup winners medal with Manchester United. You know, the wee square one they used to get on a chain around her neck. So Billy, he says, my wife, I don't remember Billy's wife's name. So sorry.
Liz.
Liz started doing the same. And so we're on this boat, and there's the two wives. They've got the European Cup medals. And this Dutch lady came up and went, oh, this is lovely. I do this. And they went, ha, hen. Do you know what that is? That's a European Cup medal, hen, right? Your man's got to win that. She says, I know, I have three. It was Mrs. Ari Hahn of Ajax in Holland.
Really?
And Billy says, he says, it was brilliant. Two wee Glasgow women just bumming their load.
That is superb.
That's a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful story. And when he told it, the humility that the late great Billy McNeil showed was, for me, a real lesson to, it's special just having that time with him. It was beautiful.
So listen, Raymond, Big Grado is going to come in here in a minute and try to identify you. We've got two problems, I think. One is that you're always on television.
And I
think
you could be on more.
Yes, I know. I know the feeling. And he might recognise your voice.
I think that's the one thing that, people kind of know the voice. Mm. People don't always maybe know the coupon so much. Right. But I think this voice is...
Can you disguise it? Have you got like a Gestapo officer voice or no, something you pull out of your acting box?
I'm fairly good at accents, but right, I need to practice them a wee bit.
Right.
I mean...
The accent of the week for me has been Dutchman Jeremy Fringpong, who's got a Coronation Street accent. Oh my god.
Coronation
days.
Street accent.
Well, he moved to Manchester when he was quite young.
Is that right? Oh, he's like a Manx lad. Aye. So he's running about Manchester, and mad for it.
Exactly.
Harking back to the old days of the Hacienda.
And exactly.
What will happen is I'll start speaking. It's either Terry Christian or Bernard Manning's been brought back to life.
Yeah. Both of them are unattractive characters. But listen, let's get Grado in and we'll continue with Who Are You in a moment.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So welcome back to the Football Daft Podcast. Who are you's guest is here, and Grado is here now with the blindfold. Grado, welcome into the room.
Good to see you, David.
How can you
well,
see
I can't
me?
See you, but it's good to be in your presence.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks very much.
Anyway, well, we'll go for it.
Yeah,
we'll have a wee feel about.
I forgot to brief our guests that they may be feeling involved in this.
It's no David Jason style.
He's not going to touch me, is he?
I might have to, mate. You know,
I don't know if I'm happy with that.
Process.
I don't know.
Oh my days,
getting fondled on air.
It's part of the process, unfortunately. Anyway, we'll go
you're
for
a
it.
6 inches away from.
All right, okay.
You better get closer.
Right, wait to be here. Wait to be see, sir. Oh, right.
Right. So yeah, I'm fully clothed. Yes, I'm fully clothed.
Right.
I'm not sitting here naked.
Right, you've got
and they all together.
Have you got a similar chest?
Well, I could be like a wrestler like yourself, Grado.
You could be.
I could fill the MEN arena.
I've wrestled there once. I've right here, Ames.
Yes,
you are male. Getting out. Let's feel above the head. Oh, you're sweating, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
It wasn't a couple of minutes ago. You can forgive him for that.
Right. Are you old?
I am of a certain advanced years, but I'm not dead yet.
Right, okay. Well, that's a start. Okay, clothing.
Although I am...
You like, oh, Christ, you've got your chest out.
Yeah, some people think I'm older than I am.
Right, well, you're wearing your chest hair is protruding here.
How old are you?
52.
Do you write books?
No.
What do you do, mate? What? What's wrong with that?
There is a football connection to this fella. Right.
Is there?
Right. What team do you support, big fella?
Oh, well, that's...
Not to be scared. Don't be scared.
Well, these days I find myself at Fir Park watching Motherwell.
This is about Motherwell, Christ. The only Motherwell fans I know are Tam Cowan and that's it. Give me other. What kind of things can I ask him, mate? I'm struggling here.
Well, I mean,
Android or iPhone?
Android.
Right.
Oh, you must have got it now then. I think if you examine his line of work.
Right, okay. Stand-up comedy?
Yes.
Ah! I know who you are. You're fucking brilliant. I love you. And do you know what?
No, it's not him.
No, I'm telling you, I think I know who it is. And do you know what? I think you one day, I think I was at the stand one day, and I was at the front row, and you picked up my tattoo, because it was just no long after I got my Grado tattoo. I know who you are. Raymond Mearns. Is it Raymond Mearns?
Amazing.
Yeah! Yes! I'm fucking delighted with that. You're a dancer.
That's superb.
I bet you don't even remember that, do you?
I don't. I have no memory.
No, see how I went to a show at the stand, right? And it was no longer, it was 2009, no longer after I was in Magaluf. And he was like, "Big man, what's your tattoo?" And I told a story about how I was in Spain, I got blue tart, and my pals never made me get a tattoo, but I got a tattoo of a name that I thought people called me. Turns out nobody called me Grado. So it was a matter of the next day I was trying to scratch it off. And then I thought, right, well, I need to phone everybody.
Can we see it?
What?
Let me see it.
There it is.
It's on his knob.
You don't remember that? Well, I suppose you gig every night for 14.
I've done thousands of gigs.
Mate, you're one of the best.
Oh, great, it's gone topless.
Okay. Do you know what?
Because I've been here, I go with my kids to your wrestling things.
The funniest thing, the funniest line, and one of the funniest things I've ever seen you do, hang with Raymond.
What?
Ickies.
Oh, that was in the Lemmy Show.
The Lemmy Show, that was brilliant.
That was 10 years ago,
that was
Grado.
One of the best scenes ever. Mate, the funeral scene.
That's right.
You
try, that's right.
They go for the... honestly...
You get a young team came up to me and went a selfie and they go, gonna do that Ickies thing.
Go do it
and
they go.
And they'll go, Ickies. I mean, I don't even know.
I love it.
It's not something I'm accustomed to. I have no idea what the effect of Ickies. I wouldn't know. How would I know? Right. Iron brewing Mentos. That's about as far as so.
I'm delighted with this, honestly. I'm honestly up. And I'm glad I got it as well. I'm delighted with this.
I'm so delighted. I'm a massive fan. I'm not blowing up your arse here. I'm a massive fan of Raymond.
Big time.
I've seen you at the Edinburgh Festival because I'm big time.
Mm-hmm.
Living in Edinburgh.
Yes, you are.
Oh, aye.
I was in Edinburgh yesterday.
And it's nice to come through to Glasgow and have somebody to talk to.
Well, Raymond, listen, thank you very much for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. It's just absolutely lovely to be here. And
do you mean that?
Hey, genuinely, I think it's beautiful to just.
Aye, no, it's good to see you, man.
Because, as you know, sometimes it's nice just to be
asked. It's got to go to house, isn't it?
About stuff. Aye, it's pottering about, you know.
I mean?
Normally just sitting in my electric lazy boy high chair, you know, just watching the telly. Just waiting for the windy cleaners to turn up.
And with that thought.
Yes.
Raymond, it's been fantastic having you in. Seriously, I've really, really enjoyed it. Look forward to seeing you live at the Edinburgh Festival again.
I do it every year.
That's my next year.
I'll be at the Edinburgh Festival, and I'll be doing my solo show at the Stand Comedy Club as well at the Glasgow International Comedy Festival.
When's that?
On the
March.
29th of March next year. Brilliant. It might be. I don't know.
Raymond Mearns, thank you.
Thanks very much, Raymond, my man.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, brother. Thanks very much. Who Knows Wins is a home of social betting. And they're changing the culture of gambling. Bookies have been taken out the equation, and you can bet on sports against your mates. So the more you know, the more you win. The more folk involved, the more money that's in the pot, the more money that's up for grabs for you and your pals to win.
Terrific. Congratulations to all our winners at the weekend. We had 6 winners, all picking up 24 quid each. Wow, brilliant. That's a lot of winners. That's a lot of people getting a lot of predictions right. So download the app on the Apple Store or Google Play. For more information, visit whoknowswins.com.
You then just set up a league, set an entry free, choose your matches, invite all your pals, and you predict the outcome of the games. The person with the most correct predictions wins a pot of money. And this week, we have picked 6 games for your chance to take our money. We have £5 entry fee. So you put in £5 and you go for the predictions. So the games are for the Premiership, Scottish Premiership. It's Ross County versus Kilmarnock.
Away win.
Okay, I'm going to go for away win myself. Hearts versus St Johnstone.
A riot and the points withheld.
What does that mean? A draw?
A draw.
I think so. Surely there's going to be a wee bit of
a Daniel Stendel bounce?
He's going to...
All right, I'm going to say Hearts win.
I'm going to say Hearts as well. We're going to go for the Championship. Come on, Smokies! Arbro versus Dundee United. My best mate, Ricky Little, who is not the captain, as I keep embarrassing him on this show by calling him the captain. He's not the captain, but hoping, fingers crossed, he takes points off the Tangerines.
Mm-hmm.
Partick Thistle.
I'm going to go for a draw in that one.
Oh, you're going to go for a draw?
Red Lochte's a point.
Come on, Lochte's. Firhill. Partick Thistle versus Carlow Thistle.
The Jags derby.
That'll be a close one. Oh, the Jags, that's a good one.
I'm going to go for Thistle.
I'm going to go for Thistle. From League One, we've got Airdrie versus Peterhead. I've absolutely no fucking idea what that score will be.
Eat the breed for Peterhead.
Go for it. For League Two, we've got Annan Athletic versus Edinburgh City. Who are you thinking?
I'm going to go for the Edinburghers.
Anyway. So what you should do is get yourself together, you and your pals, maybe it's a WhatsApp group, wherever you do your group chatting, it's a
Tinder?
Good idea.
Is that
I don't think you can do that in Tinder.
I don't know.
But what today is, get your mates, get the money put in the pot and go for it, man, because at the end of the day, the bookies are getting hee-haw, damn all of your money. So get tore in. I know a lot of my pals have been doing it and they seem to really, really enjoy it because at the end of the day, the money has gone to you or you or your mates. So, you know, it's coming up to that time of the year where you're wanting to put in a bit of a kitty for the Christmas next suit. So it's a no-brainer, Davy boy.
And it's time now on the Football Daft Podcast for our star guest. And for this part of the programme, I have to admit, Grado is not here because why else? He's doing Panto at the moment. Anyway, I'm delighted to say, given the performance of Fraser Foster at the weekend, we had to get a goalkeeper on. And I'm delighted to say, one of my favourite guys in football that I've not spoken to in about 15 years, I would have thought, Jonathan Gould, the man who helped break Rangers' run of 9 consecutive titles, and also brought Celtic their first League Cup in 15 years. That was back in 97-98. Joins us now. Gouldy, good to see you. How are you keeping these days, fella?
I'm very well, thanks, David.
Tell me, before we look back on Celtic, let everybody know what you're up to now.
Well, I'm currently a goalkeeping coach at Preston North End. I've been here about 3 months. I endured 3 months of garden leave having left Middlesbrough. I actually thought I was going to enjoy that, but after a couple of months, you actually want to go back to work, David. So it's nice to be back in, although of late our Saturdays have been ruined by a few defeats. So hopefully tonight that will change.
Any goalkeeping blunders in there?
No comment.
Very wise.
Hold on, actually, of course not.
Hey, that's an even better answer. Tell me about this fella, Alex Neil. Great reputation in Scotland, but he seemed to have an even better one in England.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be fair to say when he came down from Scotland, he was an unknown quantity and very, very quickly changed the fortunes of Norwich City around. And I actually sat and watched the final of that playoff, and you know, you could see then how he got his teams to play. You know, there's a fair amount of self-expression allowed, which is fantastic in the modern game. And he's a very passionate young manager. At the age of 38, he's already achieved, you know, a vast amount in the game.
Are you going to get promotion this year?
It's going to be tough. We've had the last couple of weeks, we've lost four key players, really, two centre-backs and two midfield players. We started the season fabulously well, but I don't think it'll take much to get ourselves back on song. You know, we have lost the last four. But we're still in seventh, and I think, you know, we play Fulham tonight and Luton on Saturday, and both at home. So, touch wood, our home record's been pretty good of late.
Now, tell me about Fraser Foster and his performance in the Betfred Cup final at the weekend there. I mean, is that as good a performance as you've seen from a goalkeeper?
Yeah, probably for a long time, especially in an Old Firm game that actually mattered. You know, these games can be pretty tight at the best of times. And I mean, I looked at the stats, David, you probably have as well. And you think that it would have been, you know, possession-wise, Rangers had most of the play, but it was actually 50-50. It just came down to the effectiveness, but without the product. And the reason there was no product was it wasn't a post, it wasn't clearances on the line. It was a goalkeeper that was in tremendous form.
Celtic had one shot on target.
That's all it takes if you score.
It's a proper smash and grab, isn't it? It reminded me a little bit of Walter Smith's Rangers and the way that they took out Celtic just before you arrived. I mean, you lost once or twice to Celtic to Walter in that his last season and his first time. But did you see a little bit of similarity the way that Lenny played it?
Yeah, probably. I think, you know, there's always different ways of setting up. And I think it's pretty clear that Edouard wasn't fully fit. And I think that is going to take an approach out of the game. You know, he holds the ball, retains it very, very well. So Neil had obviously looked at it and thought there were certain players that could do a job. And in the end, it was the goalkeeper that was required to do the main one.
Was there any particular... What is it about Fraser Foster's game that allows him to make that kind of performance in that kind of game?
There's no crap involved, David. Okay, no. and if you go back over the last 3 or 4 years with Fraser, and I came up against him when he was at Southampton, and I was coaching at West Brom in the Premier League, and in the last 15 minutes, he made three incredible saves. Now, the thing about Fraser is he was maligned after he came back to play for Southampton after his injury. Yet he then created a 708-minute record of keeping the ball out the back of the net. In the Premier League, we're talking now. Yeah. He's already got a record with Celtic of 1,256 minutes. He knows how to keep out the back of the net. And I think as goalkeeping coaches and managers, we must never forget that is what our job is. And you've got to be able to, in the modern day, you've got to be able to pass it. You've got to get it out to your fullback. You've sometimes got to go long. Have you got to hit it into second pockets perfectly? No, I don't think you have. But what you have got to do is prevent the opposition scoring. And I think the range of saves he made the other day showed what a great goalkeeper he is.
It does make me think, why on earth is he not on that Southampton team?
I'm going to come back to, I think it was under Puel where he probably lost his way a little bit. And as I said, there has been a change in how a goalkeeper's makeup should look. But I'm not a massive advocate of it. I still think there's a huge job for a goalkeeper to do. And that's prevent goals. And I think the other thing is, well, you look at Jordan Pickford, right?
Yeah.
Who is probably one of his, not adversaries, but one of his competitors for the England job, for the England goalkeeping job. And Jordan's known for his distribution. But if you actually look at Jordan, the best part of Jordan's distribution is the fact that he can belt the ball 70 yards and he's accurate with it. But he'll be remembered from the World Cup for a couple of great saves, not how well he actually delivered the ball with his feet.
Let's go back to 1997, Gouldie. When you were languishing in Bradford City reserves, did you think, I might end this season with a league title and a League Cup winner's medal here?
But you know what? Never in my wildest dreams, and probably until you've just said that there, it dawns on you how quickly the game can turn in the space of 12 months. Yeah, you're sitting pretty at the top of a Scottish Premiership.
Take us back to that period and talk us through when you first heard of the possibility that Celtic were in for you.
It was a strange morning, actually, because I'd had a phone call from my agent at the time, and he'd said, "Oh, Celtic are after a goalkeeper. Would you be interested?" And I'd obviously already been involved with the Scotland squad back in I think it was 93 when I was playing at Coventry City, but in the 3 years my career sort of dwindled slightly, and I said at the time, "So yeah, of course I would." I then picked up the phone, Dave, and I rang my dad. And I said, "Dad, do you know anybody at Celtic?" And he went, "Yeah, I know Jock Brown." I said, "Well, look, I've had the phone call from my agent. Can you just follow that call up for me?" And that's how it all came about. At the end of it, once we'd agreed terms, and that wasn't difficult. You know, you go into a club like Celtic, it wasn't about money. It was really about the opportunity. But at the end of it, I sat down with Jock. And I said, "Jock," I said, "so is my agent helped sort all this out?" And he said, "Who's your agent?" And I told him who it was. He went, no, he suggested Brian Gunn. So if I hadn't actually made the phone call to my dad, it may never have happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And was that the point that your agent became your ex-agent?
Yeah, that's why I'm not actually benefiting him with his name.
Terrific. Now, I've got a question here on Facebook from James Hope. Thanks for your question, James. And he says, "What was it like for Jonathan playing in a cup final in your first few months at the club?"
Yeah, that was it was a strange one as well, because you know there was a cup final at Ibrox because the stadiums weren't ready at the time. I think that particular one was massive for us as a squad. And as an individual, that's when it dawned on how important it was to win trophies at Celtic Football Club. We'd also gone the whole tournament without conceding a goal, which I think had only happened twice previously. So that helped it. And I think it's part of the bedding in for me as an individual and you know, probably showing that I was capable of going for the rest of the season.
So talk us through the early part. I seem to remember you arriving on the day of a game.
It was the Hibs game. Prior to the Hibs game, we played, and that was the first league game. So I was sat in the dugout, obviously watching Henriques. rather strange start to his career. Who would have known? And then I think two or three days later, I played against Roma in a friendly. We played them at Celtic Park. We beat them 1-0, and I didn't miss a game from that day forward.
When did you realise Henrik Larsson was going to be the king of kings? As you said, he mentioned there in his first game, he sold the jerseys, didn't he? Set up a Chick Charlie goal.
I wouldn't put it that nastily, to be honest.
He did, however, rather recover from it, to be fair.
Yeah, probably in the same game where I felt I had my first impact was the St Johnstone game, because I'd made a save from George O'Boyle, and then we virtually went down the other end and he scored a diving header and all these dreadlocks were flying all over the place. And you knew then, you know, diving headers, you know you've got a centre forward in your club. They're a rarity nowadays. The likes of Andy Gray made them famous, but Henry, you know, delivered on that day at the other end of the field. And he's always had, and I'm not going to call it an arrogance, because that's sometimes, you know, it's misconstrued that way. He had an air about him that was about belief. And the other thing that he had was the most incredible work ethic I've seen from a centre forward.
What about the characters in that team? Let's start with the manager, Wim Jansen. Yeah. I always found him to be friendly, but maybe cold at the same time. And, you know, he would use one word where 10 would go.
Vim was he was quite pragmatic in his approach. I think that I wouldn't say there was a language barrier, but there was sometimes an interpretation barrier instead, you know. But I loved him to bits straight away. He was one of these guys that, it connects with me more now, having become a coach, that he would put things on in training that at the time you didn't realise how important they were. You know, it was about big spaces, little spaces. You know, there was one of his methods used to be on Parkhead. If we train there, he played the first 11 against seven reserves, and the seven reserves would obviously get hammered. They'd be running around really quite aggressively and frustrated, but you knew it was because Vim was setting us up to play with plenty of space. There'd be other times where on the training field where we may have gone to Dunfermline away, and he'd tighten the area up. There'd be other times where he'd referee the game absolutely atrociously to deliberately wind us up. Everything was preparation, and it was sometimes physical, sometimes it was the dynamic of the training field, and sometimes it was psychological.
What about the big personalities in the team? I'm thinking back then, if I went into a training session or went into the club, the first voice you would usually hear would be Craig Burley's. And there were a few others who were also lacking shyness as well.
Do you know what? I don't think there was one in there that was shy. Harold Brackpack was probably the shyest, but he was also the nicest guy. Mm-hmm. So that probably does go hand in hand. It was like Darren Jackson. I didn't know much of Darren, and you know, Darren was he was pretty quick. Craig always was. I think Tommy Johnson, and then you had. Probably the pop band in Jackie McNamara and Simon Donnelly. You know, they were. It was quite a unique blend of characters, and I think it's something that's slightly lost in the game today. None of us were afraid to say exactly how we felt about situations, whether it was in the changing room or it was on the training field or even in a game. The one I do remember is Big Mark Reaper, because he was. Quite curt with his words, and I think we were. I can't remember which game it was, but he turned around to me at one point and he says, "Goldie, they've had one shot and scored two effing goals." So the other one was probably an own goal, I'm not sure, I can't remember rightly, but that was the kind of stuff that went on. And you also had Big Alan Stubbs, and Scousers are well renowned for being moany at the best of times. And you didn't get away with anything in the dressing room at all.
There was always a lot of laughter around that dressing room. What was the biggest laugh you think you all had, or the maddest thing that happened back then?
The maddest thing that we did as a group, absolutely was going out the week before the last game against St Johnstone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Drawn with Dunfermline. You know, we were all hoping for a party on that Sunday. That
Craig Falconbridge.
Sunday. Yeah.
That was the player, wasn't it? The equaliser.
Yeah, it was off his ear. It was a fluke. But it was up. So we were sat on the coach on the way back, you know, all feeling sorry for ourselves because we wanted a party. And the only way we could obviously see ourselves getting out of it was to go out on the Tuesday night. The lads were in, you know, a fair amount of poor condition. Say so myself as well. We went to the Amber Regent, David. I don't know if you remember that.
It's still there.
We used to go to. Sat on a big round table. And we pulled it back together again because I think the frustration had to be borne out somehow. And that was how we did it.
It seemed to work though, because on the final day of the season in 97-98, Rangers could have won the league up at Tannadice. Yeah. And you had to win. Against St Johnstone. I was at Tannadice working on the game for STV that day, listening to the radio commentary in one ear, and it sounded very, very nervous.
Yeah, that's and I've said this before, I still watch that game now on DVD, and I'm nervous watching it in case I can see the goal. there were a couple of, like, you know, we got off to a great start. Henrik's goal was fabulous when you look at it. I think it was a couple of minutes in.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple of dodgy moments. Boyle nearly scored. Giorgio Boyle nearly scored. I think Lee Jenkinson nearly got one. And then, you know, the goal that came with, 10, 15 minutes to go, that just settled the whole stadium. And it was a relief one. You know, like I think, you know, you think to Sundays with Celtic, it was euphoric because of the circumstances of the game. But I think that one in 97-98 was relief. For 60,000 people in the stadium, the 15 or 16 in the squad, and goodness knows how many are around the world that were Celtic supporters at the time.
And Harold Brattbach had his moment in Celtic history. Did he seem slightly bewildered by it all? I always get that. I remember him telling me that he, when he played at the Norwegian Pro League at that time, was part time.
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, what did you do?" And he was standing there wearing a Gant jacket and a pair of spectacles that were as thick as lemonade bottles. And he said, I'm an accountant.
Yeah.
And I thought, how's this guy going to settle in here? So he did seem slightly bewildered for much of his time there, and indeed that particular day.
Yeah, but you know, I look back at some of the games that we played that year, and I think every now and then he'd pop up with an important goal. There was one game he scored four. He probably could have scored double the amount that he did. There were times in training when Harold didn't even score in training for a whole week. And you did wonder. But what got Harold by was, as you said, he was one of the most genuine people you'll meet. And you know, the fact that he's gone on to achieve so much as an airline pilot probably tells you he was more intelligent than most of us in the dressing room.
does rather. Having said that, given the thickness of those glasses, if you walked onto a Boeing 767...
I always thought you used to have 20/20 vision to fly an airplane, but maybe it's not the case in Norway.
Maybe he's had them lasered. You never know. And listen, right after that game, when did you find out that the guy who'd broken Rangers' stranglehold in the titles was off? Vim?
Well, there were rumours going around, I think, for a few weeks prior. But the confirmation came. We were taken away straight away to Portugal. And I think we played against Sporting Lisbon or Benfica. I can't remember which team it was. It was one of those teams. And we were and you don't really, after you've won a title like that, you really want to go and celebrate and enjoy it. And now, don't get me wrong, we did. Okay.
really?
And when we got to Portugal, we knew we had a game to play, but it was secondary on our minds. But then the thunderbolt came that Vim was going to leave. You know, the circumstances in and around it weren't very clear. I remember us, I think, pretty sure we wrote a rather harsh email to the people that mattered at Parkhead about how we felt about it. We got together as a group and sent that and said, look, we're not happy about the situation. Vim's done a fantastic job. you're basically stopping any momentum that we may have gained having been under so much pressure for 9 years. And I remember us being in a lift, and there was about four or five of us, Jackie McNamara, I know Tommy Boyd clearly was one of those, and we were discussing, we weren't happy. But there was almost, and I know every one of us spoke to him about it, but it was almost as if it had already been done, David. And I can remember us, we were in the hotel. There was about five or six big round tables. And I remember Vim standing up, and he was in tears. And he said, look, just one more time, can we stand up for the champions? And it was a poignant moment. But I think at that point, we knew it was irreversible. And I think Vim had probably made his mind up well before even that final game.
I can't imagine Vim Jansen being in tears.
No, he was really emotional about it, because we all were. We'd had a special year. Under a huge amount of duress, and I think that was probably the fact that Vim was new into the idea of stopping 10 probably helped him a little bit, because he didn't get too involved in the circus that goes in and around Old Firm rivalry. He was able to step back and make decisions that were in the end played out to provide us with a championship.
After that season, Vim goes, and you get a new manager. What was that like?
I wanted, when they made the appointment, we were still sat in the dressing room, and I was still waiting for Vim to walk back through as if it had been a nightmare. And it was, to be honest, Joseph Van Gloss came in, and he's one of the nicest guys you'll meet in football. He had a lovely way about him. Yeah. He was walking into a wounded dressing room, and that made it very, very difficult for him. Mm-hmm. But the way he, the respect that he had from us as a playing group, it's just a shame it didn't transform into winning something for him in that year.
Got a question on Twitter about Dr. Joe from Lost Boys, and he says, what was Dr. Joe like to work with? He almost seemed to me, says Lost Boys here, like a lost pensioner.
No, he do you know what? He would probably be more suited to this generation because of how he managed and how he coached.
Yeah.
So I think, he was probably tarred by his time at Aston Villa as well before he came up. But, if you think, if he gave this football club one thing, it was Lubo Moravcik. Yeah. So that's what Dr. Joe should be remembered for.
When did you spot that he was a player?
Within the first minute of training.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, he's a wizard. He was a wizard. He still is. I think I played a few years back with him at Celtic Park in one of the charity games that the club put on. And he was amazing still. The way he can check back off both feet, he'd probably be in Liverpool or Man City or, their teams right now if he was still playing.
I always wondered, where the hell had he been all my life?
Yeah, that was quite a funny one, actually. And it was when John Barnes came into the dressing room as manager. And I can remember him turning around to Lubo at one point and saying, if you'd have played like that all your career, you would have made lots of appearances at international level. At which point Lubo pointed out he'd already played 76 times for his country.
And at the World Cup.
Yeah, at the World Cups. I'd never heard of Lubo Moravcik until he came to the football club. And that's the crazy thing. Probably at that point, the football wasn't on the telly to the point it is now. But you think, I think Zidane's one quote, he's always asked, who's the best player he's ever played with? And he said Lubo Moravcik. So you couldn't have a better mentor than that, really, could you?
Listen, a guy who came in that year that I thought was something else on and off the pitch was Mark Viduka.
Yeah.
What a player. But also, I mean, it was a hell of a transfer. What are your memories of Big Dukes and his arrival?
Well, you can actually credit the players for that, and in particular, Big Alan Stubbs, because I remember Jock Brown coming into the group at some. We must have been away somewhere, and he said to the lads, "Who's the best centre forward you played against?" And Stubbsy turned around. He said, "Well, we played against him the other week out in Zagreb." He said he was unplayable. He said physically, he was strong. He was technically good, and he wasn't short of pace. The next thing you know, we've signed Mark Viduka. So you know that's how it happened.
I didn't know that.
Sorry?
I didn't know that.
That's true. Stubbsy. True story that.
Yeah.
So Alan Stubbs was probably, and Alan did pretty well against him in the first tie. We didn't do quite so well in the second tie. We got beat 3-0 out there. But then the strange thing with Big Vidukes was, and he didn't really endear himself to the dressing room immediately, was that he hadn't even played a game for us, and he said, "No, this is just a stepping stone to Europe." And then decided to take a month off because he had some mental issues, you know, and we respected that. And then he came in and we went, "Okay, we've got a proper player here." Mm-hmm. He was a foil for Henry, you know. And I think, I'm not sure whether it was his second season, David, but I think by Christmas he'd got 30-odd goals. I might be wrong, but I know to face as a goalkeeper, he had one of the hardest shots I've ever witnessed.
And was that tough every day? Did you get smashed with those every day?
I used to get out of the way of it most of the time.
Very wise.
Probably downhill, to be honest.
Very wise. That's why you still look the same now as you did back then, old son. Now, listen, after Dr. Joe, you mentioned him there a minute ago, John Barnes came in. I've got to say, John Barnes, I was so excited when he got the job because he was one of my favourite players.
Yeah.
And goodness me, it went downhill quickly.
Yeah. You know, I'm the same as you. I mean, I made my Premier League debut against John Barnes, which is a huge thrill, when he was at Liverpool.
And, did you get a back?
Yeah, and he was one of those players that, as a fellow professional, you saw him get on the ball, and he did. He'd light up your face and light up the TV and light up the team that he was playing for. And I don't want to be too critical, but I think he was given a job that at that time was way in advance of where his learning was. He wasn't at that point capable of managing a club with the demands and expectations of Celtic Football Club. And I know there was a team put behind him to support that. Obviously we had Terry McDermott and we had Kenny in there, and Kenny eventually took over. But I just think, you know, and it's a shame, I think it was too early for John.
What happened the night of Super Cali Go Ballistic, which is when it ended for John back in February 2000?
Yeah, I'll tell you what happened, and you might remember this. On the Saturday before, a speaker started wobbling because the winds were too high, and the game was called off on the Saturday. And history could be completely different if that hadn't have happened.
Yeah, I know.
Because then we went to the midweek fixture, and you know, obviously as a goalkeeper, you're always last in, David, right? Because you go into the back of your net and you pick your glove bag, your water bottle, and you get into the dressing room. Before I'd got in the dressing room, the whole thing had already kicked off. Big Vidukes was in the corner. He had his boots off, his shorts off. People were effing and blinding. Eric Black was having a go. John wasn't saying a lot at the time. And I walked in, I'm going, "What's going on?" You know, he says, "Oh, he's refusing to play. Eric's told him he needs to pull his finger out his arse," or to words to that effect. and then the whole thing kind of spiraled into a bit of a debacle, was probably the best way I could put it. You know, things got said at half time that probably should have been put on the back burner until after the game. We should have just really got on with it. And gone out and turned the result around. But I think that was, you know, when I look back now again, you look back in management, how the whole thing was handled at halftime could have been done differently.
Was it unfair that John Barnes get the sack, or was it unavoidable?
No, I genuinely think, sorry, David, I genuinely think that was the right thing at that time. And again, history shows that.
What did Martin O'Neill do at Celtic to completely transform the club?
His first meeting with the players was huge, because he laid down a couple of markers. It was pretty clear who the boss was. I think he then bought some. He was given obviously a reasonable amount of money, but he bought strong people into that dressing room that I think we had previously lacked or we'd lost. He bought those kind back in. He bought winners back in. You know, Chris Sutton, Neil Lennon eventually came in as well at some point. And I think John Hartson later, they were, if you think back to the transfer fees that were paid now, and they were paid, 18 years ago, these were players at the top of the game.
Mm-hmm. They really were. Was Chris Sutton a transformational signing? He seemed to give something extra to Henrik Larsson, and John Hartson seemed to add some more as well. But for me, Sutty, I was in the tunnel in those days. He terrorised everybody, particularly me, but opposition players as well. Would that be a fair interpretation?
Well, I think he scared all of us. He still does. He says the wrong thing. But, we had to, having lost Big Vidukes, we had to have a foil up front. You've always got, whatever team, you talked about Edouard earlier, you've got to have a platform to play off. Sutty was that. He was a mountain of a man. He could hold. He knew, the word pin and Chris Sutton is synonymous. He knew how to pin a fullback, a centre back. And once you've got a player that can do that, it enables others to run off him, And then he had Stylian Petrov behind him. He had Paul Lambert who was doing all the marshalling. We had good wide players. It was Jackie McNamara, Didier Gat, Alan Thompson was quality. Lubo was still there. But if you've got that focal point, and Chris was that, it allows so many other parts of the game to come to fruition.
He's a pain in the arse on TV, is our Sutty. But he was exactly the same in the dressing room, is it not?
Yeah, he was. He'd cluster bomb the place. Cluster bomb it, sit back and let everybody else have a pop. But at the same time, I remember walking in, and there's a book that was written about Henry VIII, and it was written in the first person, as if it was Henry VIII. And I'd read it probably 10 years ago, before this, and because I was doing English history at school. And I remember walking into the dressing room, and he was sat in the corner reading this book about Henry VIII. And I'm thinking, this is a professional footballer that's just come from Chelsea, and he's just coming into our dressing room. So I think even going back then, he was mischievous, but he was very intelligent at the same time.
And that's what makes him box office today, doesn't it? Without a doubt. Now listen, take me to Chris Sutton's Old Firm game debut, which was the 27th of August 2000, a day that I think turned Celtic into the club that they are now.
Yeah.
How did Martin get you up for that?
I don't think he had to. But I think because at that point we had won nearly every game anyway leading into that, I think bar one, the confidence was already there, but it was just what his belief in us as a group was already pretty obvious. And again, I say because of the characters that he brought in. I mean, I remember one game he came in, just to change it slightly, and this just to show you what he was like, Martin. He came in and he literally walked in the dressing room. It was before we played Hibs. And he went, I'm not sure if you guys are up for it today. And walked back out. And we're all sort of sat there going, so that's our team talk. And I think we won 5-0. Right? So they were the kinds of things that Martin did. They're sort of synonymous with Cluffy, really. And whether he'd learned that off Brian, I'm not sure. But I think that day in particular, I mean, we had a great start, let's be honest, to be 3-0 up in no time at all. And I think the supporters, the ground rocked as well as any time I can remember being there as a player myself on that day.
I'll listen to a question here. Sideshow Bob says to you, what was your reaction when Rab Douglas came in at Celtic?
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
His name's actually Sideshow Bob, which seems quite fitting in this context.
I always knew that Martin was going to strengthen the goalkeeping department, all right? Because we had Dimitri, I think, was still at the club then, and Dimitri was having issues with his knees and hadn't quite sort of taken the mantle off me at that point. Stuart was still there, but I'd managed to sort of fight that little battle during the pre-season. Mm-hmm. And So I knew there was behind me. I knew there was always a strain of thought that he was going to strengthen the goalkeeping department. At the time, I was always going into every game under an added pressure, alongside the fact that you were playing for Celtic anyway. I remember, I think there was a game in Helsinki where I didn't cover myself in glory, but we still managed to get through the tie. And then we played against Bordeaux, and I didn't put myself down to any of the goals, but I think that was where Martin thought I wasn't probably that level that he needed. So when Rab came in, it was only going to be a matter of time. Well, don't get me wrong, I fought for that position, and we were still unbeaten in the league when I was left out. So that was quite hard to take. But again, you come back to how Martin O'Neill manages, and he got me in his office. He said, look, he says, I'm playing Rab this weekend. He said, and you'll be disappointed. I said, yeah, I'm really disappointed because we're unbeaten in the league and we're on a run. He said, yeah, I know that. He said, but what I'll do, he said, I'm going to offer you a 3.5-year contract. Mm-hmm. He said, I understand your value to this group. It's just that sometimes your goalkeeping gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Cheers.
So I sort of sat there and I thought, I think I'll, you know, I'd been at the club for 3 years and I loved the place. And I said, well, I'll accept your very kind offer.
Thanks very much.
And he paid me back, to be fair, towards the end of the season when, made sure that I was on the bench as well for the cup final that ensured that I actually had the treble medals. And
brilliant.
So in answer to Bob, I was gutted. But I'd already learned in that 3 years that it was more than just about being a playing member of the team. It was about being part of a big club and a squad that you wanted to be successful.
Talking about being part of squads, I'd completely forgotten that you were part of the World Cup 98 squad. First of all, how the hell did you get a game for Scotland?
My grandma's from Blantyre.
Ah.
Yeah, I've still got family in Blantyre, so it was on my father's side.
Is that the rough side of the family?
Yes, it is actually.
Sorry, Blantyre, we're only kidding.
Yeah, the other side was quite well educated.
Oh, bless. Talking to your family, Chippy has come in on Twitter and said, Jonathan, is your dad still as mad as he comes across? I never thought he came out mad as his Wimbledon team came across has been a bit mad.
Yeah, I think that's probably what he gets remembered for. He's always been what you call a football maverick. But again, he's always worn his heart on his sleeve, and hopefully that's what he'll always be remembered for. That FA Cup win in 1988 against Liverpool was is a tremendous part of football history and also our family. So, yeah, he's retired now. I don't think he's mellowed yet. I still think he believes he could manage Real Madrid if he was given the opportunity, but isn't that the beauty of old football managers?
Oh, without a doubt. A couple more questions before we go. Tell us about being in the Scotland squad, France 98. You had Neil Sullivan above you and Jim Leighton as well. I mean, were you just smoking cigars? Were you topping up your tan? Was it a relaxing experience?
No, it was a late call-up because obviously we'd won the league and I was over in Jersey and I spent 3 days absolutely obliterated with a Celtic supporters club in Jersey. And I got back and I had a phone call saying, "Oh, you've Andy had gone AWOL, gone for some milk again, and would you be keen on going to the World Cup?" So I literally got on a plane, went out to Washington, met the lads, and ended up. You know, that's the pinnacle of any footballer's career is to be able to go to a World Cup. I didn't think I was ever going to play, but I felt that I was a bit unlucky to have been left out in the first place because of the form I'd shown that season.
Mm-hmm. Have you still got the kilt?
You know, it was a tremendous place to be. It was fantastic. You know, that first game against Brazil to open the World Cup, and you know, there were a lot of my Celtic teammates there as well. So it was a good 3 weeks.
Do you still have the kilt?
I do, and it literally is 12 feet above me, and I'm vowing to be able to fit into it again one day.
Well, listen, good luck with that at 51, old son. One last question here from the audience. Neil Henderson has asked me to ask you, how often do people compare you to Grant Mitchell?
Yeah, too often. I'm a little bit taller than Mr. Grant Mitchell, or Ross as his name is, but yeah, I was even when I was playing, I think I got aligned with looking like him. I thought I had plenty of hair, but it was better than Les Battersby, as I used to get called on the other occasion.
Yeah, Warren Mitchell wouldn't be quite as good. Good man, Goldie. And I'm sorry Grado couldn't make it. I bet you're gutted about that.
Next time.
Yeah. We'll get me phone you up with one of his foul mouth WhatsApp messages that I get every couple of days.
That'll do.
Cheers, Goldie.
Thank you very much.
Gorgeous girl, it's time for our Beer 52 match of the week. Last week we asked for a prediction for the League Cup final, and surprisingly, out of the hundreds of entrants, only Paul Geelan got it right. Now, is that? I told everyone it was going to be a one goal advantage for the winner. Did I not say that? It's always been like that in League Cup finals and Scottish Cup finals between the Old Firm. So, anyway, well done to Paul getting it right. This week, our Beer 52 match of the week is Murderwell against Rangers on Sunday. It's Raymond Mearns against Grado, Motherwell Rangers, on Sunday. So all you have to do to win is guess the correct score before 12 o'clock on Sunday. Everyone who gets the score right will go into the draw to win the beer. Now, you can enter by commenting on the link on the Football Daft Facebook page or tweet your score to @footballdaftpod with the #freebeer. That's #freebeer. Winners must be over 18 and stay in the UK. And you can get your free beer from Beer 52 as well. Are you worried about a wee reaction from Rangers after the UEFA Cup? Are you worried about a wee reaction from Rangers dropping 2 points at Pittodrie, all the energy that they lost on Sunday, and of course Thursday night's Europa League game? Ooh, could be a wee banana skin.
I've got a feeling Stevie G's going to spice it up this week. I want Greg Stewart to start. Maybe see Defoe play for the start.
Yeah,
and I think Rangers will win this game. I think I'm going to go for 3-2.
I'm going to go for one each because Motherwell are third top of the table and they're doing well at the moment. Three wins in a row, albeit against likes of St Johnstone, St Mirren and Hearts, and they've been struggling.
But they'll be up for it.
I'm slightly worried.
They will be up for it.
I'm slightly worried that Motherwell might drop 2 points.
You're worried? Were you exposing yourself here, David?
Well, this is doing my zip up. Now, all you need to do is go to beer52.com/daft and we can sort out free beers if you cover just $4.95 for the postage. Now, you normally get 8, but as you're a Football Daft listener, we'll give you 2 extra free beers, and that's a total of 10 free beers.
Your first box will be sent to you next day delivery, and it's a monthly subscription service for beer. And Beer 52, they don't hold you to ransom. You can leave at any time, but these beers are tremendous. There's a big box of beers out there waiting for me, so I'm going to take that home tonight once I've done panel. I'm going to sit, relax.
For the team.
What do you mean?
Waiting for the team. The beers are waiting for the team, surely. Couple for John, couple for me.
Oh, there's plenty out there. There's plenty out there.
Oh, brilliant.
Aye, don't worry about that. So just go to beer52.com/daft and get your first case of 10 beers for free. Scrumptious.
Oh, I tell you what, that puts me right in the mood for a baby. So should we call it a day here?
Aye, let's call it a day. I need to boost anyway, mate.
Let's
read some reviews, but...
How many have we got?
Well, here's one for Stewarty Boy 94.
He says, what else can you want in a Scottish football podcast? Great stories, great banter, and even better guests.
Lovely Stewarty Boy.
Thanks, Stewarty Boy.
Right, this review comes from not David Tanner. No. This is a bit... If that even is your real name, your reviewer. Great podcast now that David Tanner is doing it, in brackets, while Sean Cameron is taking a break from it. Can you sack Grado and producer John now? That should lead to even more improvement, indeed perfection. This sounds like somebody that has the same fucking vocabulary as somebody sitting across the road from me. David is the dog's testes. I know a certain guy called David that loves to mention genitalia. Kind regards, Anonymous.
Well, thank you, Anonymous.
I've got two words for that. It's yourself.
I refute that allegation, but if I were to swear on a Bible, it might have been me. But I just...
You put up fake reviews?
No.
David Tanner!
Why no, you like it, you can't it, take it you anywhere?
It wasn't me.
It wasn't me. Anyway, good, David.
Good use of punctuation, though, eh?
You know what? Go for it, mate. Go for it. Get yourself tore in. But what an awesome episode. I'm just a wee bit gutted that I had to leave for the Gouldie interview. So I'm off now. I need to boost. And we'll see you next week.
Two pantos in one day, yep. And you've managed to squeeze bits of the podcast either side of it. I'm impressed with your workload, old son. Remember to contact us and let us know your donkey. And we'll see you next week. Thanks again to Jonathan Gould. Thanks to Raymond Mearns. Yep. Thanks to you. Thanks to producer John for producer joining us. Thanks to you for turning up. And being a star as always.
Oh, Dave, you melt my heart. David, you've been football.
Grado, you've been daft.
It's your show. Remember that?
All my days.
All my days.
This is 4Network.
There's a mammoth in menswear. The penguins are purchasing presents. And there's a polar bear in the underwear? This Christmas, Inverurie Head has been overrun by AR creatures with the festive Arctic Trail. Simply download our AR app and hunt around the centre for our AR animals, winter creatures and Christmas surprises. Find them all and you'll get 2-for-1 ice skating. The festive Arctic Trail at Inverurie Head till Christmas Eve. It's AR fun for all the family.